Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning call and talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for our good friend David Inge. Glad you could listen today. During the first hour of the show, we'll be talking about photography, something we like to do. And on the radio, it seems that it's a strange thing since we can't show pictures, but we sure can share some expertise. And here to do that with us is Brian Johnson. He is our resident expert on all things photocentric. And we'll be here to talk about what's new in the world of photography and taking pictures, cameras, digital photography, computers, anything you'd like to ask about. That's the point of the show. You can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you are around Illinois, Indiana, wherever you happen to be hearing us, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. If you match the letters with the numbers, that's what you get, 800-222-WILL anywhere else. Good morning, Brian.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
appreciate it. Always fun.
Sure.
So you're also a professor of journalism, in addition to being a very fine photographer. I just want to know, did I make up this word photocentric?
Is it? I was going to say that's a good word, Jack. I don't know. Photocentric, I think we can use that.
Okay.
I haven't heard it before, but we will start to use that.
Maybe I should register it as
internet a trademark
domain.
And try to get the, yeah.
Yeah.
Try to get photocentric, the website. Yeah.
Photocentric.com.
And why don't you type it in and see?
Actually, that's a good idea. I think I'll do that as we talk.
But actually, Jack's already registered it. So if anyone else is going out to register it as we speak,
exactly.
It's already taken.
Yeah, it's too late. We started talking a little bit about digital photography. And as you know, this is something I'm really interested in, and I've seen more and more really cool stuff. I love film. And as we've also discussed, I love black and white film,
sure.
Which is just really a whole different, it's like an art form to me. It's just something beautiful about black and white.
Right.
But, well, you know, maybe we can talk about that as well. But the digital realm is becoming really interesting.
Right. Well, and in fact, I mean, even as far as the black and white film goes, some of the digital cameras, some of the video cameras even, they have a black and white mode. Some of them even have a sepia tone mode. So you can do a video with that old-time look, which is kind of cool. But, you know, we've talked a lot about digital cameras on the show over the years. And, you know, always before, what I had to say was, well, if you have a specific reason to have a digital camera, if you have a website or something, then I think it makes sense. Well, what's happened over the years, and really the part that was missing from the whole equation, was the output. You know, we didn't really have photo finishers who could, you know, give you a good permanent print from your images. There wasn't a real easy way to store these images long term. Well, you know, now when we have, you know, a 30-gigabyte hard drive selling for $159, and now that we have inkjet printers that produce phenomenal pictures, and some of them, probably most notably those from Epson, have good permanence and long-term light fastness. And some of the printers even don't need a computer connected to them. So you just take your memory card, whatever, you know, flavor of it your camera uses, and plug it into your printer, and it'll produce prints. And not only that, then you can get the photo paper for it. And yes, there's, you know, the nice glossy photo paper, but there's also photo paper that's pre-perforated so that as it prints out these snapshots and you just kind of work the, you know, prints apart from one another, and there you have it. There's your snapshot. There's also been a lot that's been going on with internet usage of photos, as in websites and all. But further than that, for photo finishing for people, there are a number of websites where you can send them your digital files or your film. They'll then post, either they'll scan in the film or they'll take your digital files, they will post it. So then with a password, your family members can go to that site and select which reprints they want to get and have them mailed and they're billed directly. So that's really neat. I was at the Macworld Expo this summer. Kodak was there, and one thing that they had that I thought was really neat, and I've thought a lot about it since then because I think it's even neater than when I was first thinking about it. Sony, I think, had first come out with a picture frame that was an LCD screen, you know, the kind of screen that's on a laptop.
Right.
But it was like $800 or $900 for kind of a snapshot size thing. Well, now this product that Kodak is, it's the same sort of thing. It's a picture frame with an LCD monitor in it. They're selling it, I think the list price was like $299. So prices come way down. But that's not the really cool part about it. The cool part is they have this photo network where you can share the photos with your family and friends instantaneously all over the country. Mm-hmm. So you shoot your pictures with your digital camera or scan in your regular picture, send it up to the photo network. And then the next morning, you know, when Auntie Laura wakes up and Grandma and Grandpa wake up, there they have new pictures of their, you know, nephews and their grandkids, just like that. So that I think is really neat. I mean, so it, things are moving to the point where now there are some output options that make sense to start thinking about some of the digital technologies.
So this frame, just to, you know, follow up on that, it has, is it wired to the internet? I mean, how do you connect?
Right, right. Yeah. You plug it in your phone line, and I believe you can set it for how much you want it to connect, but usually once a day or twice a day, it'll go, connect, download all the photos to the frame, and then that's it.
You don't need a computer to.
You don't need a computer. It just you just plug this frame right in, and it's an attractive kind of wood frame with a little LCD monitor.
It's $300.
It's $300.
Yeah.
Now the photo network thing, they were saying it was going to be between $5 and $10 a month.
Oh yeah,
for that. But if you think about what it costs to have a roll of film processed, you know, that's right in the ballpark.
Pretty soon, that'll probably be a wireless device as well.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. And that would be so easy to do.
Yeah.
So easy to do.
Yeah. So you could have devices all, you could have frames all over your house.
Absolutely.
Would
sure.
Every day.
Sure.
Or
sure. And as the LCD technology, if it ever does get cheaper, you know, there are some of those huge plasma displays like those TV sets. Well, you could have a huge mural that would change.
That'd get a little more expensive, I imagine.
Oh, I think it would because some of the plasma displays are about $5,000.
We have a call to talk with. Let's include them. And by the way, let me just mention that photocentric.com has already been registered.
Oh, too bad, see?
Darn it.
Good idea, though, see?
Well, 2 years. In fact, somebody got it back in 1998.
There you go.
So I'm a little bit late. Oh, well, that's all right.
You're thinking, though.
Yeah. trying to do what I can. Okay, we have a listener in Oakwood on line number one. Let's talk with them. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello. I have a couple questions.
Sure.
The digital cameras are gradually getting to have more and more pixels. And at what stage will their resolution be comparable to a standard negative or a positive on a 35-millimeter camera?
Sure. You know, there are some cameras out there right now that are equivalent. I think Kodak's done some studies where the number of pixels in a 35-millimeter frame is somewhere between 6 million and 9 million. So that'd be a 6-megapixel camera or a 9-megapixel camera. Some companies have just come out with a 4-megapixel camera. There are some studio versions of the cameras. I know that Cytex has one that they just introduced. That's a 6-megapixel camera. But even, let me tell you what, I mean, with an inkjet printer and even like a 2-megapixel camera, and especially for snapshots, it's every bit as good as film, really. Even up to like an 8x10, you're still talking about a pretty high-quality image. So,
okay.
You know, there are definitely some downsides to digital. I don't think it has the latitude that film does. You know, can't really record as well the highlights and the shadows if there's a great difference between those. But, you know, the digital cameras have really come a long way as far as, you know, the sharpness and the resolution goes.
Now, when you get a 35-millimeter film developed now, you can select if you also want a photo CD.
Right.
And for 35 millimeters, it says it's around 1,000 by 1,500 pixels.
Right.
More than that, but I don't remember the exact.
Right.
And so that would not be as sharp as the prints would be that you would get or the positive transparency.
Sure. And some of it depends on how you're going to use it. You know, what's going to be the final outcome for that digital file. You know, a file with that resolution is a pretty high-resolution file. So if you're going to use it for a newsletter or if you're going to output it from, you know, again, this inkjet printers that a lot of people have, that's going to give you easily, I think you could go probably to like a 11 by 17 inch print and have it look pretty decent.
Yeah. I'm wanting to load it into a computer to do some stuff with it.
Right.
Obviously, I need it in digital.
Right. You know, and the photo CDs are a very cost-effective way to do that. You know, it's very cheap to do it. It gives you the photos, as you know, on right on a CD. So it's definitely a good option if you need to use the photos in your computer anyway.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Other callers are welcome, by the way, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. We have some school announcements that I want to pass on because a lot of the school districts are closing early because of the heat. So let me pass on word. The St. Joseph School District in East Champaign County will dismiss classes early for the rest of the week due to the heat. St. Joseph Grade School will let out at 1:50. And that includes today. St. Joseph Ogden High School will dismiss at 2 p.m. today, and Ogden Grade School will let out classes at 2:15 p.m. today and for the rest of the week. Monticello schools will have early dismissal the rest of the week as well, and children will be dismissed today through Friday according to this schedule. Whiteheath at 1 o'clock, Lincoln dismisses at 1:15. Washington and Monticello High School will dismiss at 1:30 p.m. And finally, the Prairie View School District near Thomasboro will also dismiss classes early the rest of this week at 2:15. So there's word. If you have questions, you can call our front office and we'll pass on the details and we'll also get other updates, I'm sure, and pass that along. We're talking this morning during this hour, Focus 580, with Brian Johnson. He teaches photojournalism. He's a professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois in the College of Journalism. And he's also a very fine photographer. And we're talking about anything having to do with photography. Your questions are welcome. We have one listener waiting, and others can join us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Next up, a listener in Urbana, line number one. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a large collection of 35-millimeter Kodachrome slides. Is there any reasonable way these days of digitizing them so that I can put them on the computer and print them off?
Sure. Most of the companies that offer a photo CD service, if you want to send them to Kodak, and then there are also some independent companies that will do them. If you have a large quantity, you're going to get a pretty good price on having them scan them and turn them into a photo CD. Last time I checked into this, it was about a dollar a piece or $1.50 a piece. And I think they normally can fit about 100 of them on a photo CD. So, you know, while that might sound like a lot, multiplied by 100 slides or something, when you compare that to, you know, taking it somewhere or even yourself scanning each slide individually, that's a very cost-effective way to have a large quantity digitized.
I see. Are there scanners that one can buy that are appropriate for such a small object?
Sure. And there are a number of film scanners out there. Canon makes one that's pretty inexpensive even. It's about $400. But yeah, it has a scanning resolution of 2700 DPI, which is going to yield a very nice scan. The thing is, probably per picture, you know, by the time you dust it off, get it in, do the scanning, save it and all that, you're probably looking at 5 to 10 minutes per picture. If you're in a solid thing. Now, Nikon makes a scanner that also has an auto slide attachment so that you can have it do, you know, kind of an automated run where it'll scan slide after slide after slide. But the scanner you have to buy that'll do that is about $1,500. And then the slide attachment, I think, is about an extra couple hundred bucks. So there are ways to do it. It's just a matter of, you know, how much time you have to work on it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Great, thanks for the call. We just got a scanner. I think it's a Hewlett-Packard that has a slide attachment. It's uh-huh. just this, you know, little sort of triangular box.
Right.
You stick the slide in. How do those work?
Right. Oh.
Haven't tried it yet.
Well, it's better than nothing. You know, I mean, and the thing is, I mean, I'm coming from an area where I'm a photographer, and I'm looking mm-hmm. at this from going into reproduction and wanting the highest quality of from my work. Those sort of flatbed scanners that have a transparency adapter are nice for, you know, one-off sort of things, mm-hmm. or if you just need to get it scanned in for sort of to put it in a newsletter until you can get a better quality scan. So, yeah. I mean, I think they're okay, but they're definitely not going to have the dynamic range and the sharpness of a scanner that was designed specifically for film.
Okay. We have another caller on a cell phone. Let's go right to them on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I have a collection of historical photographs that were taken by my grandparents circa 1906 and 1920
uh-huh.
that I'd like to be able to share with other members of the family.
Sure.
I'm interested in what you would recommend. This CD thing sounds like it might work.
Right. You know, one thing that would be neat about the CD is once you have the photo CD done, you then could duplicate it.
I see.
Now, something else that I've recommended to people before is if you have color copies made
mm-hmm.
of those old photos, it retains a lot of the kind of look and feel and character of those photos.
I see. Uh-huh.
And if you have enough of them done, it can get, you know, into a reasonably cost-effective range.
I'm assuming I may have about 100 altogether.
So what you could do is if you did the color copy, you might be able to fit, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 on a page. And, you know, if you've got, I don't know, what, 10 or 15 relatives you wanted to get copies to, you could almost produce a little booklet.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about from the CD directly?
Well, you could do it from the CD directly, but if you weren't really concerned about using them on the computer, if you just had the color copies done
mm-hmm.
directly from the prints, that's a pretty effective way to get them to people without spending $1 million to have each photograph, you know, photographed and then printed on photo paper. So for those old photos, I think having a color copy done,
mm-hmm.
It produces an output that's very much like a photograph. And if you can put, you know, as I say, 2 or 3 or 4 up on a page, that's...
Okay, you're talking about scanning it?
No. Just take it to, you know, Kinko's or uh-huh. Dean's Blueprinting or wherever you are. I'm sure there's some place that has a color copier.
Mm-hmm.
And they put the print on the copy board, and they press print and...
Oh, these little gadgets that I've just seen in the like, Myers or someplace.
Well, you can do that, but that's going to be more expensive.
Oh.
It's just like a black and white copier, except it does color. And,
I see.
And it's more effective.
Okay.
Well, it's more cost-effective is what I mean to say. The kind of things like what you have in Meyer probably produce a more photographic-like output,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to be a lot more expensive.
Right.
So,
and I have even older photographs, too. Would that work? I mean, like 1880, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, most of the color copiers can scan something up to 11 by 17,
oh.
11 inches by 17
Great.
Inches.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of a do-it-yourself project, then.
It can be, but, you know, at a lot of places for their higher quality color copiers, they have it behind the counter. So
mm-hmm.
you know, show them the photographs and tell them what you want done, and then they'll do it for you.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Thanks for calling. The issue of longevity of a print comes to mind because, I mean, we're talking about some very old photographs
right.
on very old paper. Are those,
right.
you know, how long are they going to last?
Right.
And, you know, what should we know about preserving things?
Well, I'll tell you what, those photographs are going to last longer than 90% of all the color pictures people are taking now.
Mm-hmm.
The black and white process, if it's stored out of high heat and high humidity, is those prints are going to last for a couple hundred years.
Wow.
A lot of the color prints that are done right now are going to last at the most 20 years. Epson just came out with a new printer and a new process. It's the Epson Stylus Photo 2000P. And I'm looking at a print right here. I wish I could show it to you all.
It's gorgeous.
It's amazing, yeah. I mean, it looks photographic. But it was done through an inkjet. They say that the light fastness of this print will be 200 years.
And this, was this a film photograph?
I don't know that. I don't know because they didn't say. They just had the print samples there. And it, I mean, honestly, looking at it, it could have been film or it could have been a digital camera shot.
It's this lovely little girl in this sort of like
pixie costume.
Yeah,
almost,
pixie
kind
costume.
Kind of ballerina pixie.
And just the colors and the translucence are just beautiful.
And it's on a nice heavyweight paper, too, yeah. Which is very kind of photographic in its feel. So, but the thing is, now that print that you're holding right there is about $2, $2 or $3 worth of, you know, materials.
Yeah.
Not to mention that it probably took, you know, 20 minutes to print it out.
Well, still, for a print like that,
exactly.
I mean, if it's going to last for 200
right.
years, that's a good thing.
Exactly right. But if you have 100 of them that you're trying to scan in and print out that way, that becomes a second job.
Yeah. Okay. And that printer you mentioned before the show costs about $800.
Yeah, they were saying that the list price was $899.
Okay.
But it'll print out up to a 13 by 19, but they also have banner paper, so it can print up to 13 by 44 inches, which is kind of cool.
We have another caller. Let's include them in the conversation. And we're almost at our midpoint, so I'll just reintroduce our guest, Brian Johnson, professor of journalism at the University of Illinois. He's our resident expert, our photography czar. I've just, you know, promoted.
I like that.
Okay.
We'll keep that one.
Sort of an imperial
okay.
sort of
that's right.
Motif.
I'm going to come with a crown next
okay, good. And if you'd like to ask questions having to do with photography, we're talking about digital photography, but we can talk about films and SLRs and Leica cameras, anything.
Yeah,
anything. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, a listener in Urbana on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello?
Yeah.
You've answered several of my questions, so what about the lasting quality of the conventional printers that are out there now, inkjets?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. My second son was born in November of last year, so for the birth announcements, I did this picture, and I did a little bit of digital kind of a frame around it and sort of what I thought was kind of a cool way, printed them out. I brought one of those into school. I've got it by my computer monitor, and it's already fading. So, you know, some of the original inkjet printers you're looking at, honestly, within months, the images start to fade and lose their color. Epson has sort of an intermediate long-term product, and I think it's their 1270, and I think they have a smaller size that's also in that same vein. I think it's the 870 or something. That has a light fastness of about 26 years. But then they've got this brand new one that just came out that they're saying is now a 200-year lifespan. So for the original inkjet printers, it's not good news. They really start to fade pretty quickly. So
it's okay then if you have something, a project where you just want the essentially for a few days.
Right, or if it's something, you know, it's a flyer announcing something that's going to happen that maybe people aren't going to keep, or, you know, maybe a Christmas newsletter where people mostly are giving it so they can read the information and they're not necessarily going to archive it. I mean, that gets in sort of a funny area because, you know, some of those letters, I had to find some pictures of my son at, you know, birth and then 1 year, 2 years for a project they're doing in his kindergarten. And my parents had sent me this Christmas card that they had mailed out back in 1963. It was one of those, you know, photo of the kids and then, you know, Merry Christmas printed on the photo paper. And that looked as good as it did when they sent it out. So some of those Christmas letter type things do get archived. So I kind of even hate to say that, you know, something like that doesn't need long-term life because sometimes that's the only history we have of our family. So
you better make a copy of it.
Right.
And CD.
Honestly, that's it. You know, you could scan it in or keep the electronic file. Those would be good things. Or you could, you know, even a color copy. You know, most of the color copiers, the toners have a pretty good lifespan. So that's another option.
So from the sound of things, in another year or two, the cameras will be a toss-up with the higher quality conventional cameras.
I really think it's getting to that point. You know, some of the earlier, like 1 megapixel cameras now are, you know, $150, $200. And now that these printers are out where they interface with the camera directly, you know, it's starting to get to the point where it's going to be a little bit of a toss-up. The thing that still hasn't changed from this equation, though, is that with a digital camera, you're still doing all the work yourself. You know, you're essentially, quote, processing the pictures. And that does take a fair amount of time. Plus, the pictures themselves aren't necessarily any cheaper than having the film processed and printed, just because of the expense of the paper and the inks.
Is it possible to get a high-quality conventional print that will last longer than, what did you say, 20 to 30 years?
Yeah, there are some papers that notably Fuji make. That's a very long-lived paper, and I think they say around 50 years for some of those papers. There are some other processes. There's a process where you can make prints from slides. It's called Cibachrome. You know, those are supposed to be 100 years plus.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some products out there, but you usually have to go to a commercial or a professional photo finishing lab to have access to some of those other mediums.
If you're going to enlarge something, you need to go to somebody like that anyway.
Right, if you want to have a nice job done. Mm-hmm. Although the nice thing about a lot of the modern films is that they have such good latitude that they print very well. But unfortunately, what's happened, because it seems like consumers want the very saturated colors, a lot of the manufacturers of the papers then have made the paper that they print the pictures on, they've made that very saturated, as well as the film being very saturated. So you have this great latitude in the film, but because everything is so contrasty and saturated all the way down the line, you end up in a way not having all that great latitude because the pictures come out so contrasty sometimes that it's not the full range of tones that really exist in your negative.
I guess the other question would be, it would sound as though the printers, at the rate they're progressing in about 4 or 5 years, there might be reasonable price consumer printers that would give reasonable life to the...
Right.
We're perhaps 4 or 5 years away from really being able to use digital.
I think where it's going to be, you know, very widespread and very economical and all the pieces are going to fall together, I think you're right. I'd say about 5 years now. I can tell you at my mom's family reunion, I was amazed at how many of my relatives had digital cameras they were shooting with. So I think it's, you know, it's getting out of the early adopter phase and getting into the mainstream end of it. You know, there's some of the lowest resolution digital cameras, you know, that'll produce an image that's 640 pixels by 480. Some of those you can pick up for $100. So we're definitely moving that way.
Well, thank you.
Sure. And one thing that we can mention about this too is that as digital cameras get better, so does film.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a lot more latitude that they can put into it. Mm-hmm. There was an announcement, I think, right around the last time I spoke, about there was a new process where they could make the film 10 times more sensitive to light than it is presently.
Wow.
So that could offer some advantages.
So it'd be better for low lighting circumstances.
Better for low lighting, but then maybe they could make the film itself thinner and not have to use as much. You know, so there are all kinds of options there. So I'm not saying that film is dead by
right.
any means.
Right.
So I don't want people to think that that's what I'm saying, or, you know, that they can't call in and ask about just, you know, regular things.
Well, we got lots of questions about Leica cameras last time I seen your
Right. Record. It's, you know. We haven't had anyone asking about any old equipment yet.
Yeah. But. Okay. Well, people are welcome to ask about whatever they want having to do with cameras, photography. 333-9455. That's around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. A friend of mine recently got a 3.3 megapixel digital camera.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what brand it is, but it has 40 seconds of video at 15 frames per second. And one of the really cool things about it, I thought, was that you could put the image on a screen and actually zoom in and around the image.
Sure.
So that, for example, when you're all the way back, you have he shot some incredible pictures in Thailand, and also on the airplane of some sunsets and things like that. And you could zoom all the way back and get this panoramic view, but then select a certain part of the image and zoom in, and it was almost as if you were moving inside the image.
Right, right. I think what's neat about that is you really have a feeling of you're doing it because you're doing it in real time.
Right.
I mean, we've always been able to do that with film,
uh-huh.
but it meant going into an enlarger and enlarging specific sections or scanning in the image, and then you can do the same thing. But, you know, with the digital image, it's already right there on the screen, so it gives us much, much more of that feel. You know, there are some other cool things, too. I mean, there Apple makes a product that's called QuickTime VR, where if you shoot a bunch of still pictures, you can stitch them together so you have a panorama. Another company has something similar to that. They're called iPix, where you take two fisheye shots, so you put them together, and it's like two hemispheres that you're within. So those are some things with the digital realm you could never do with regular images.
Pretty neat. Well, suddenly we have several callers. Let's go on and talk with them. Next up, listener in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, hello. I just tuned in. I hope I'm not repeating a question that's already been asked, but I would like to ask Brian what he thinks is the future for fine art black and white photography in the wet process, darkroom tradition of, say, Ansel Adams and Edward Weston, or will all that be replaced by digital work and laser printers and so on?
Right. I don't think it'll be replaced ever, but I think what's going to happen is it's going to become the archaic medium. You know, it's going to be, you know, there are going to be some artists that work in that, just like today we have artists that work in different media that are essentially obsolete, quote, obsolete. But I think there's, and as Jack mentioned earlier, there's a real beauty to a finely crafted black and white print. So I think it's going to be out there, but it's going to fall away from the mainstream,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously with black and white, it's been out of the mainstream for a while. But even in photo schools, I know in photojournalism here, we're not really doing any printing in the darkroom at all. It's all scanning in the film. I know over in art and design here at the U of I, too, I know they're moving more towards a digital realm, too. So the time is coming when those techniques are going to be sort of secondary, I think.
Mm-hmm. But do you think there'll still then be a market? I mean, like, people still make stained glass.
Absolutely. And, you know, people still paint in oils and all that. So I think there will be a market for it, and it'll, you know, it'll be the realm of the rich.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of depressing to put it that way, but...
well, I mean, it is.
I mean, it is. Yeah. There's something about, you know, working with an enlarger and, you know, taking your film and taking your print paper and dodging and burning, and it's almost, I mean, it is a craft.
Right. It is. And I think, let's not get too carried away, but I think there's a certain oneness that you get with your product.
Uh-huh.
Because you're really working with it, and you see it slowly come up in the developer. And there's something magical about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had a lot of fun doing that. It does take a lot of time. But,
it does. And, you know, working with your image in the digital realm takes time as well.
That's right.
But I'll tell you what, my opinion, you can do a lot more with an image once you've scanned it in. Now, the problem is that a lot of the scanners don't really handle all negatives well. I think with an enlarger, you could sometimes save an overexposed negative much easier than you can with a scanner. But on the other side, I think the scanners can save an underexposed negative much easier than an enlarger could.
I see. Well, we have a couple callers waiting, and we'll go on to them. Next listener in Muhammad on line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Actually, the question I have has to do with scanners.
Okay.
I've been doing photography for a very, very long time, and I work both in 35 and 2.25. I have a huge backlog of negatives and slides. And I would like a scanner that would do both.
Right.
That would do both well, actually. I have sort of an amateur budget. I can't afford $10,000 or $15,000.
Right.
And I've been told that the scanners that do 2 1/4 and bigger negatives and slides don't do 35 very well.
I don't know if I would be tempted to say that. I mean, that hasn't been my experience. You know, I've found that if they do the larger size image, some of the better scanners that do this do a fine job with 35 millimeter. But, you know, it's going to vary some from scanner to scanner.
Have you had any experience? There's one scanner that's put out by Minolta that does both 35. It's dedicated. It's not a flatbed scanner.
Right.
Have you had any experience with that?
Right. I haven't had any direct experience with it other than, you know, looking at the specs on, you know, Minolta's web page and all that. But I do know some people that have Minolta scanners that have been happy with them.
That's kind of, I hated to have to buy two scanners.
I know. I think you could definitely buy one. But, you know, as you say, when you're getting into a scanner that will handle those larger sizes, you're starting to get into a little bit more pricey range.
Right. Well, if we could keep it under $3,000, it would probably be worthwhile. But so you think we can do that?
You might be pushing that. You might be looking at least like 4 or 5, but that's getting close.
You got any other suggestions besides the Minolta?
You know, the other thing, only other thing you could do is, you know, there are some pro labs that'll scan in your images for you.
Photo CDs.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes they'll just scan them in and give them to you on a, you know, zip disk or, you know, just a regular CD. But that's nowhere near as convenient as being able to do it yourself. But sometimes they're going to have a higher quality scanner in the first place, so maybe the scan you're going to get is going to be better.
Right. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks, and good luck.
Bye.
We have about 10 or 12 minutes left with Brian Johnson, professor of journalism at the University of Illinois, taking your questions on taking pictures, photography, scanners, digital, analog, all those are fair game. We have one caller waiting and time for others if you'd like to join us. 333-9455. Around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Next up, a listener in Chicago on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi.
Yes.
I tuned in late, so I hope my call is appropriate. I have an old photograph of my father taken in Army uniform back in 1918, a full-length photo, about 1 to 1.5 inches by 2.5 to 3 inches. And, of course, it's fading, and I'd like to preserve it and possibly even enlarge it and get better definition.
Sure.
Can you suggest something?
What I would do in a case like this is I would probably take it to a photo studio somewhere and have them actually photograph that print and give you another negative of it.
Uh-huh.
And, honestly, I think that would be my first thought to really to preserve it as well as it can be preserved. The other thing you can do, and this would be fairly easy to do, is you could, you know, just put it on a flatbed scanner and scan it in and save it that way, and try to scan it in at as high a resolution as you can to try to preserve it. But as I say, my first thought would be to have, you know, a photo studio actually photograph that photo.
Uh-huh.
And give you a negative back.
Any idea or can what would the approximate cost of these things, of these procedures be?
Well, it depends on the lab and if they're set up to do it. I mean, it could be anywhere from $10 to $50, just depending upon if it's something they do on a regular basis and it's, you know, they just kind of throw it in the queue, or if it's something where they have to set up their copy stand and all that. So.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, good luck. Still, when you have an old photograph like that, that
I think it's worth it. And especially, and you know, honestly, it's because of the smaller size of it that makes me want to have it photographed rather than just scanning it in. If it was an 8x10, then that would open up other realms. But just because of the size of it, I think it would make it. And because it's fading a little bit, I think photographing it again would be the way to go.
Good. Next up, a listener in Urbana on line number 1. Good morning.
Yes. Do you do any cropping when you do the scanning, or do you always scan the entire frame?
Well, that's an excellent question. I normally recommend that people scan in the entire frame unless they know that for a very specific purpose, they only need one section of the frame. Other than that, I think it really makes sense to scan the entire image. You can always crop it later, but if you don't scan the whole image, you're out of luck. You have to go back and rescan it and basically duplicate your work again. So go ahead.
The question for me is that if there's some things that you're obviously be better off by taking out of the picture and doing some cropping with the scanner,
sure.
then you get a bigger image. Would that make any difference in the final product, whether you scan it whether you crop it in the scanner or
right.
crop it in Adobe, say?
I think if you can scan it at the actual size you're going to use it and the actual cropping, if you have a specific use in mind, that's going to give you the best quality scan. If you're scanning in kind of multiple images where you're not necessarily sure of all the subsequent uses, then I'd say to scan the whole thing and scan it in at a high enough resolution so that if you crop later, it won't drastically affect the output.
Right. So is this... a factor that would make that would help in the deciding whether to get a good scanner yourself and to scan them all, you know, look
right.
negative as you do it, or turning them over to a commercial place and have them scan
right.
the whole thing.
Right, and some of it depends too. I mean, is it sort of a hobby? Is it something you're going to enjoy to
well,
do?
Well, it's an archive that, of in a sense, of work that I've done.
Right,
that I want to
yeah.
turn over to somebody at some point.
Right, so. In that case, I probably would buy the scanner yourself and work on it. And, you know, and especially if it's going to be an archive thing, I would be very hesitant to crop it because you just don't know what's going to be significant later.
Right.
You know, something that's just in the outside of the frame, you know, maybe it's, you know, an old newspaper. But then 20 years from now, the headlines on that newspaper might be important for some reason. It might simply help date the photograph if
right.
you know, that gets lost. So
if we think about the difference between the quality of cropping in the scanner or cropping on the computer, is that an appreciable difference or just a small difference?
I would say it's a small difference.
It's a small difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very good. Thank
uh-huh.
you.
Sure.
Well, that is very useful to know because, you know, you get a scanner. And the really cool thing is it comes with, these days, a lot of software
right.
that helps you manipulate and crop and, you know, manipulate file sizes. If you're producing through the web, you want to reduce the number of colors
right.
and all that stuff.
Right. What I tell my students is that when they scan their photo, they should always save the original.
Uh-huh.
So they scan it, they save it, then they open up the photo if they're going to work on it and immediately do a save as, and then I have them type in, you know, Alexander and Andrew period ADJ. Well, on Mac we can put an extension like that and won't freak it out, but just put, I always tell them to put ADJ for adjusted.
Ah.
You know, that's the code that makes sense to me, so that's what I tell them to use, and that way you always have that original scan
mm-hmm.
saved away in case somehow or other you really go down a wrong road when you're working with it.
Yeah. Good. Well, we have a couple of callers, and we'll try to get them both in the remaining 5 minutes of the show. Next up, listener in Champaign, line number 2. Good morning.
Hello. I'm calling really to help the fellow that called in about having his father's picture copied.
Uh-huh.
Make sure that the studio will give you the negative.
Good.
I've had pictures taken or copied of my mother, and they refused to give me the negative.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah, so that's
excellent.
All.
Yeah, no, thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Yeah, yeah, because that's that is the crucial thing. And, you know, some of the studios, if they're taking a portrait originally, they want to keep it because that's how they make some of their money. But if it's something you're taking in to be copied, you definitely want the negative. So you need to ask them up front if that's what they're going to give you. And if they don't, go someplace else.
Very good. And next up, listener in Kankakee on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Yes.
If we could change millennia here a moment. I have thousands of old 35-millimeter slides that
uh-huh.
I used to view on a Bell & Howell slide cube.
Right.
Can't find the slide cube anymore.
Right.
To get it fixed or the bulbs. What could I use without fooling with lots and lots of Kodak Carousel round trays?
Nothing.
No.
You know, someone, actually the last time I did the show, someone called with the same exact problem.
Yeah.
And there is no solution. You know, the carousel slide trays are just so ubiquitous that is the option, pretty much.
Okay.
So, sorry.
Thanks very much.
Sorry for the bad news.
You bet.
Okay. Well, we just have really a couple minutes left, and we're out of callers. So, you know, is there anything else that is?
Well, there, you know, they're just, you know, things like, you know, some of the Palm handhelds or the handspring. You know, you can plug in a camera right into the Palm or the handspring, and, you know, you can do video conferencing or you can snap photos and move them on. So that's a neat little thing that's happening. And then there's also Kodak has made a digital camera that's they've ruggedized. They've made it so that it can go out in a rain shower.
Wow.
It's made with bigger controls. It's made with a more of a rubberized grip, so it's a little bit more shock resistant. And that's the thing people need to know about the digital cameras is that they also are probably a little bit more fragile than your standard point-and-shoot 35 millimeter.
What's a camera like this? This is a 2-megapixel digital camera. Any idea what this sells for?
I do, and I'm thinking it's right. It's a little bit more expensive than you think for a 2-megapixel, but I think it's around $500 to $600.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, you know, good SLR can run you.
Yeah. More yeah. Than that. Easily. Yeah. So. Oh yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. It's amazing. We've been talking about this for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years.
Easily,
and
right.
How quickly things have evolved.
Right. But even, you know, even with the 35 millimeter cameras, talking about a good SLR,
yeah.
I just bought a whole slew of new cameras for my photojournalism students. Mm-hmm. This is the bottom of the line Canon EOS Rebel 2000. And it does things that we would have just wished we could have had 5 years ago. I mean, you know, it does auto exposure bracketing. If you get the Canon Speedlight flash, it does amazing calculations for you. And this is the bottom of the line camera, but it is so advanced that it'll do it all automatically for you. It'll do it sort of semi-automatically for you, or you can do it manually. So even in the realm of traditional photography, the computer technology has really helped the photographer so much. Be able to shoot more like a professional without having to go through all the mental gymnastics. Ultimately, though, it still comes down to the shooter. You know, you don't say to a writer, gosh, this is a really great story. What kind of typewriter do you have?
Right.
You know, what kind of word processor do you use? That's not the point because it comes from the person's head. And all this other stuff is just inconsequential. It's really how you can compose a photo, what photo ideas you can come up with yourself, and then how you produce them. That hasn't changed. I don't think that will change. You still have to have the human there coming up with a photo idea in the first place.
Well, that's an excellent point to end on. Since we didn't talk about that, maybe we can do that next time.
Okay.
All right. Our guest has been Brian Johnson, professor of journalism at the University of Illinois. Thanks for being here.